So, I heard you did some recordings for your research. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, well, for the research I'm doing just now, I'm a PhD student just now, and for that, I'm actually using semi-structured interviews.
All right.
So basically, the recording is about the information going into people's homes and into people's communities and getting information from them about
Okay.
things. So I think it's slightly different to the kind of research you're doing,
Yeah,
is
I
it?
do actually do phonetics analysis, which is slightly different, because in order to analyze very fine-grained details of the speech, of the sounds that we produce with our organs, with our mouth, and we really need good, very good quality sounds. So we need to bring people in the sound booth and recording the way we are doing just now, which is a bit emotional for people come. So because of what phonetician wants, try to record people as they speak when in a spontaneous environment.
So for you, it's about how people are saying things, whereas for my recordings, it's about what they're saying.
Basically, this is the difference. This is the main difference. But we want people to speak spontaneously as they speak in the street, as they speak with their family or their relatives. So once we bring the lab in, like in a sound booth or in a studio recording, there's always people tend to, to switch and
Ah, so put on their kind of posh voice
try
and
to be more hyper-correction, it's called, in which is not really good, because we won't. I don't know if you do a social linguistics analysis and see how different people from Edinburgh, from people in Glasgow, in these vowels, so you won't compare two given vowels. You cannot really do if you're not spontaneous. So what we try to do, just to create some tools or some methods to elicit speech to distract people.
What kind of methods do you use then?
So there's different kinds, make it really depends on the kind of analysis you want to do. So in some of my first recordings here is something called map task, which is really, really funny. You give people like two maps,
Right.
but they're different, and they
Okay.
are in the same room, but they cannot see each other because we put them in different corners of the room. So they have to, this one of the speakers is called information giver or instruction giver, and the other is the follower. So the giver is to say, to give instruction, and the other has to design the route on the paper
Oh,
like
right,
that.
okay.
But they have different objects, so it's a bit difficult to explain if you don't have an example. So the giver may say, go around the house and then turn left at the traffic light, but he maybe has traffic light on the other side of the paper. So even if they've been recorded, after a while, because they're so involved in the task,
They forget
they forget
to
they've recorded. You
hypercorrect,
can
or
see the difference between the beginning and after, I don't know, 5 minutes of recording, and people started swearing or saying, get angry, or so at least if it's not spontaneous, called semi-spontaneous speech.
I mean, sometimes well, not something similar, because again, it's a very different type of recording. But
Yes.
I've done, well, obviously, I've done recording for my own research, but I've also done some recording for the Scots
All
Corpus,
right.
here at
Yes.
this uni. So some interviewing for that, but also just trying to get people to have conversations with each
Yeah.
other in Gaelic or in English. You kind of get the same thing for the first 5 minutes. People are very, very conscious that they're being recorded. And I find this in my interviews with people for my onomastic research as
Yeah.
well. People are very conscious of it. People really want to give you the right answers. And there aren't any right answers.
Yeah, we call this in linguistics, well, you may know this, it's called observer paradox. And in any field of study, as soon as you want to study a phenomenon, and when when you're observing something, automatically you influence the phenomenon, so you don't get the real things. You can never get the real things. But this is why we need to create some methods to try to be.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I try to overcome that is, well, the way I've tried to overcome it in some of my research is to do some ethnographic research as well, and
Yes.
beforehand, before I do the interviews, so get to know people, play some
So
kind
people
of,
get used to you and become
yeah,
like friends.
completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so get used to having me around, get used to speaking to me, get are kind of happy with me being there, that I'm kind of part of whatever's happening.
That is typical in social linguistics research. And
it does seem to work for my interviews, though, because people do seem to be just that bit more comfortable. Again, when they notice the tape recorder, you know, they might take a couple of minutes to get into it, but they forget and they do start then just having a normal conversation.
Yeah, in this kind of interviews, there's some topics that are used in order to make people very, very spontaneous. So if you start talking about, I don't know, if people say, tell me about a scary moment of your life, or tell me about a difficult situation or something, you know, you're very involved with your emotions, that they tend to be more vernacular, it's called in social linguistics, more spontaneous in a way. So can I ask you, what kind of tools do you use? How do you organize your recordings, like equipment and stuff?
I need to be really, I have something that's really portable, because I usually go into people's homes, or maybe it might be a place of work, if the place of work's in the community. So I just usually use a portable DAT recorder.
Yes.
With just, usually just a single microphone, actually, even if I'm recording more than one person, just because I find it gets really obtrusive otherwise, and I don't need the kind of fine-grained phonetic detail that I would need if I were doing a phonetic analysis. Yes. So, for some of my early recordings, I was using a dictaphone. And before that, for some of my undergrad research, I used actually just, one of these big tape recorders that you get where you just have normal, proper cassette tapes. So that was quite old school.
I haven't seen a cassette for ages, actually. For me it's a bit different. Because sometimes for phonetics you really, really need to look at very, very fine, great details. Mm-hmm. So for my last project I did, the difference between coronals and coronals, the sounds produced with the tip of the tongue touching in this area of the mouth near your teeth. So whether it's more dental or it's alveolar, so it's a very, very small difference. And I want to compare Italians and Italian English. So Italian speaking English and Scottish English. So I need to create some words that in a way would contain this sound and see which is the difference between them. But in order to do that, you need to bring them in a sound booth.
Well, because it's such a tiny difference. Tiny, and
recording
to the human
must be very, very clear. Otherwise, you can't do any kind of an analysis, like with the software. There's proper software to do acoustic analysis. And the problem is, as soon as you bring someone to the booth, even when you talk to them, they say, "Okay, I'll do that, no problem." As soon as they sit in front of a microphone, they get nervous.
Oh no!
And they start, moving a lot, making a lot of noise and stuff.
And it becomes unnatural again, as you were saying, with the observer's paradox.
Yeah. So I try to tell them to be spontaneous, to don't worry a lot. And especially because they have to read on paper, right? Not to touch the paper during that.
So you use word lists?
Yeah, I had to use word lists. But I used to include a word in a sentence. So in order to distract the speaker from the beat I was interested. So I don't know, I put the words like table in a sentence, like put a glass of wine on the table, something like that. So they're not focusing on the words. Otherwise, if you just put a list, then put more attention, they may understand what is the beat. So all the T's and stuff. So create word list, but also random words mixed up, so they don't have a clue. And I also was looking at the vowel, and the U vowel. It's called background vowel. So, you create and try to create words, to find words that contain this.
Yeah.
I remember you said don't touch the paper, but all they did all the time, just moving.
Oh, and of course, interference with the microphones.
Yeah, which is really bad for acoustic analysis.
Oh, not just for acoustic analysis, though. I mean, when I'm... Some of my recordings, I mean, you try and make it as quiet as possible, but because you're in people's homes and they've allowed you into their home to do this.
Think of your drink or something.
Yeah, it does. It becomes a little bit difficult because you can't really say to people like, oh, in your own home, you can't do this and you can't do this. And it must be an entirely quiet environment when they have other family members moving around and this kind of thing.
Or television, dogs.
Yeah, television I have to insist on not having because it's so much of a distraction. But listening back to some of them, a typical one is the ticking of a clock in somebody's living room, and they've put you in the living room, and you've suggested maybe another room might be better, but it has to be the living room for whatever reason, and you have this tick tock all the way through your two-hour recording.
It's typical.
Your
I'm working some corpus just now, transcribing some corpus. Mm-hmm. Almost in every house, it was a kind of a ethnographic study.
Oh,
so
right.
The interviewer went to interview the people in their own houses. Just to make everything more relaxed and spontaneous. And there's always a clock. And in one of them, there was like, what's it called? It's a cuckoo.
Oh, a cuckoo clock,
clock. And every, like, 15 minutes, there was this thing coming out.
Oh, no. No, I know. It's worse when you're listening back, though, when it starts drumming into
But if you do this kind of social linguistic analysis, it's not really a problem.
It is not so much of a problem when you're doing more of a content analysis. You're looking at the content of what people are saying rather than
discourse analysis.
So how people rather than how people are saying it, but it makes it more difficult just in terms of your own concentration, trying to listen to what's being said and kind of how people are saying it.
Quite
and
distracting.
And
then because you need to listen again, can be tiring.
Mm-hmm.
So do you do any like trial recordings before to see if everything is okay?
Yeah, I always do actually before every interview because they tend to be really long interviews as well. Like, I just can't imagine how bad it would be getting to the end of kind of maybe 2 hours sitting talking to someone and then finding that in fact it wasn't picking up or something like this.
Yeah, it would be terrible.
So no, I do this and it's to kind of get them used to the fact that they're being recorded a little bit as well.
I think I did the first time I was recording some booth.
Mm-hmm.
I was sure I was recording, but I wasn't.
Oh no! Did you lose the recording?
I didn't lose. We just lose 1 hour. No, maybe 40 minutes or something. So we need to do that again. But it's funny because the very first recording I did with one of my friends, which is Italian, and he's undergraduate study, first year here, mm-hmm. and his English not great. So, because I want to compare Scottish English and Italian English, ask them to speak English, but also Italian, to see what is their what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the, when they speak Scottish or English, well, English. So if there's difference and there is actually if they're shifting their vowels and the sounds when I don't have the word now. It's called, but okay. And it was a friend of mine, so as soon as we started recording, we started laughing.
Oh no.
We couldn't concentrate because we always laugh all the time with him. He's a very, very funny guy, all his jokes and stuff.
Mm.
We couldn't concentrate. And then I couldn't be serious because it was so funny to listen to him. Well, he was getting quite nervous while reading the recordings. And the same time, I couldn't be because I need to concentrate on the screen and make sure he wasn't mispronouncing something. Because all the time he mispronounced, we had to go back on the words. So I had to, you know, note down all the words. We need to go back and record.
So it's a shame that wasn't a kind of one where you wanted it to be spontaneous because that would have been perfect.
And the thing is, I prepared this word, but he was pronouncing with an Italian accent. Not properly. So if I was looking at the O vowel in like in boot, you would say bot. Something like that. But that's a good, very, very good experience actually.
Mm. I know, I find it quite a steep learning curve your very first recording or your very first couple of recordings.
Yeah.
Especially if you're using new equipment or something like that.
Yeah.
But even just really simple things like getting people to turn off mobile phones, things that you think you would think of.
There's so many things that you need to be careful of that you wouldn't imagine. Because as I said before, I told people to not to move with their feet or paper But what they did all the time, just move a lot and move the papers and make so much noise because they were nervous. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really talk, so I tried to tell, you know, because during the recording you can't really talk. So we made a break and said, try not to move a lot. He said, I'm not moving at all. He said, yeah, you are. Don't move your paper, don't touch your paper.
And with the paper, it's the worst. Because we were experimenting with that before we started this recording, weren't we? And
yeah, it just... I'm very interested in this noise.
Mm-hmm. But it was just so loud when you do that.
And it just ruined your acoustic analysis if you say this kind of sound. Do you find this kind of, job or research rewarding or making recordings stuff?
I do, yeah. I suppose I find it rewarding because I'm asking people to tell me something about themselves. And quite often we do start with a little bit, because it's about names. My research is about names and people's names and... And, you know, that kind of goes on to why people called their children this or, you know, why they were called this and what kind of things they like and who they know and kind of branches out like that. But it tends to start from their early life and where they've grown up. And it is quite rewarding because I think people, although they tend to be really nervous and at first they always tell me, no, well, you know me, I don't know anything about this subject. I'm going to be rubbish. There's no point in asking me about this.
They get to like talk about their life and their story.
Yeah, people don't get much of a chance to just sit and tell somebody about themselves. Yeah. And I think I find that aspect really rewarding because I think people actually get something out of that. So,
well, for me, it's not that rewarding from this point of view because just at least the words more of the time. But with map task, sometimes it's so funny to go back and listen.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, they're trying to find this place, but it's all mixed up, so they get angry or they say things, also in a funny way. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of fun. So where are you going? Like, you know, I'm here. You know.
So they're probably enjoying it as well.
Yeah. Also, when I was back in Italy, I did some of these kind of recordings. Mm. Most of them have really enjoyed that. And it's really funny when you do your analysis and you go by listen. But it's rewarding in a sense that, you know, once you got your recording, you can do analysis on what you're interested in.
Yeah, I find this as well, obviously from a completely different perspective, but once you have that data and you can do something with it, you can find something out.
And then spend time on them and see, there's so many things come up, things that you don't imagine. So if you just speak to someone, you don't even imagine this. But the more you listen, say, oh, he's moving the tongue like that, or he's more dental, or his teeth more alveolar, something like that, or his bowels.
And you start to be able to build up patterns and pictures of what people generally do somewhere and what people generally do somewhere else.
And I really find fascinating the fact that, you know, if you see, I don't know, from my experience in Italian, speaking English, and especially when they are the first, like, my speakers were very, very poor English speaker.
Right.
So I thought, well, they are speaking English but with a very Italian accent. Mm-hmm. So also the vowels are modulated and created with we call it a vowel space, it's called, so within the Italian vowel space. But they're actually shifting a lot towards what are the vowel space, for example, of English or Scottish English. So they do something. I mean, there is this...
this is slightly off topic, actually, but that's quite interesting. Do they move towards... Scottish English, so from being in Glasgow then, or do they move more towards an ideal British English?
I was looking at the background of the vowels, like in boot or goose, something. And the Italians, it's difficult to explain if you don't have any phonetics, but Italians are more...
You did phonetics.
And it's more back and more high, while Scottish is more... towards the fronted and central.
I was going to say some of my back vowels tend to go towards central.
So when the Italians' words were very, very back, very, very high, but when they speak English, well, what they learned back in it was standard English, so it's not really Scottish. but they were moving towards the center. They were not so high as in Italy. They were very close. So when I compared on a chart the Scottish and the Italians, Italian English, they right. were quite close. So right. there was this strategy. How do you say? There was a. There were no strategy, but.
Oh, no, I think you could say strategy, could you?
Or when they were doing something mm-hmm. in order to get closer. So the Italian U, it's U. So if they were saying boot, they were not saying like boot with Italian.
Okay.
But more closer to...
To where Scottish yeah. English is.
One thing, I don't know what I do sometimes. I need to analyse my recordings.
I say it sounds like you know exactly what you're doing, but no. I suppose we've kind of talked a little bit about how you encourage people to talk about what you want them to talk about, because you use word lists and elicitation tasks. And
So it's
very structured in a way then.
It's really structured because sounds, phonetics, this thing is called assimilation. What I'm saying, it's not assimilation, but it's co-articulation. For example, the U changes a lot according to the preceding sound and to the following sound. Yeah. So in every words, in every kind of context, keep changing.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, if we want to look at a U, we cannot just look at a U, but we need to consider previous...
Yeah, it needs to be in similar context.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. previous phonological environment and the following phonological environment. So you need to create words that have, you know, this kind of structure, mm-hmm. this, you know, syllable. And because I was comparing Italian and British words, or Scottish English, I had to find Italian words that had the same context. So yeah. the U was in the same context as Scottish words.
Mm-hmm.
It's just difficult to find words that have a meaning. Because I didn't want to use a nonsense word. I want to use words
mm-hmm.
to put in a sentence to create elicitation. It was really difficult. That was a really, really hard task. Because,
So it requires a lot of planning and structuring.
To design the project, the table for the word, something really time-consuming.
Yeah, period. But you know from there exactly where the interview is going to go and that it's going to be the same for each speaker.
Because,
I mean, mine, I suppose what I do is really quite different then in some ways. I mean, I use semi-structured interviews in that I do have topics that I want
topics,
to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I kind of let people go where they want to go with it rather than try and hem them in and talk about, like, have a structured interview and ask them one question, response. Mm-hmm. I try and make it more like a conversation and allow them to go off and talk about what they think is important rather than trying to impose what I think is important on it. As long as I get kind of a similar range of information from each person, if you know what I mean. But that can be more time-consuming and more difficult than it sounds, I think.
I can imagine. Yeah, this is the problem with phonetics. It's quite a pain because we really need to be very structured and very... there is also something called interactional phonetics when you study the phonetics about interaction, speech. Because when we just speak like we're doing just now, we probably... Because words are all co-articulated, it's called, and we don't really pronounce the words, all the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you have a list, for example, if you say table, if you're speaking probably you don't say some of the sounds, you cut part of the word. And so.
Completely, and people have a kind of reading voice, a story voice as well, which is maybe what you get a little more in terms of word lists.
Especially if you study something like intonation.
Mm-hmm.
Of prosody, and it's really different if you're it's interaction if you're reading a passage or something.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think the benefits are then of using recordings compared with other methods?
Yeah, the benefits are especially nowadays that you can store, you know, once you got a recording, you can store and you can go back whenever you want.
Yeah, so you can use it again.
Yeah, again. So if you do, I don't know, I got my data and did this kind of analysis, if in 10 years time or 5 years time, 2 years time, you want to do, you have an idea, you want to go back on the same data, and you can use the data for this kind of analysis. But then when you go to recordings, it's very, very simple to manage them in an electronic way. So, you know what I mean? You got a dialogue, then you just want a bit that you can cut the bit you want.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You can create corpora, don't manage electronically. You know, there's a lot of software you can, you put a dialogue in this corpora and say, find me all these sounds, find me all these words. It finds you all these words and you can just listen to the words you're interested in or make any kind of statistical analysis or something. So,
For me as well, for any kind of qualitative research, I think the fact that you can go back to it as well, because there are some interviews, because I always give people the choice. Obviously, I much prefer being able to tape record them in some way and be able to go back to them, but I'll give people the choice and I can take down what I can take down with a pen and paper, but you don't get the same quality of information and you don't get the quotations that you can use to back up your arguments and that kind of thing.
Yeah, also, just now for my master dissertation, I'm looking at the pragmatics, trying to correlate pragmatics and phonetic realization.
Okay.
So when you deal with pragmatics, it's very tricky because there's a lot of interpretation. So you need to go back and listen over. And sometimes, the more you listen, the more you change your mind.
It's true, actually. And it depends what you've been reading as well. I mean, you might read something which starts to make something clear for you. And then you can go back with that in mind as well.
Yeah. So, a first analysis, you think, oh, it's that. Then you go back and listen again. Say, I was wrong, probably.
Mm.
But it's a very, very tricky pragmatic. Because it's also a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And because it's all about context. I'm studying Scottish English, Glaswegian speakers. So there's all these kind of things that we're not aware in, but linguists know, like pauses, like intonation, something, have meanings. Mm. So we interpret, when we speak in discourse, we keep interpreting these things, but there's a cultural difference. So a pause may mean something for me, for Italian, I mean, if I stop for, I don't know, 1 second, might mean that I give you the turn.
Yeah.
But here, maybe has a different meaning. So it's all these kind of things, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really fascinating.
It is, definitely. And what about rather than using other methods and things as well? Because I think you've used corpora to some extent, have you?
Yeah, I've used many.
But again, have you used recordings taken from corpora rather than using the textual corpora?
I always work on spoken corpora.
Right.
Because I always had the idea, I'm much more interested in spoken.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really find that. Well, it depends what kind of study. If you do a lot of philology or something, you study historical stuff, of course, you don't have recordings. That's it.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested in the phonetics. Mm-hmm. So the phonetics just study.
Yeah, and of course, you need the sound, spoken
so
data.
You just need the spoken data.
Yeah.
You need phonetics. You can reconstruct the sounds from books and something. So phonetics, the historical phonetics can. Mm-hmm. But
if you have an IPA transcription or something, you can sit and read that.
But. So you can compare some, documents and try to recreate it. But I'm not really interested in that.
I mean, I've used questionnaires alongside some of my kind of more ethnographic interviews and things. And I found that, it's good in that you can get more data. Well, you can get data from more people. And you can get data on specific things that you're interested in that you think are important. But then again, I'm asking about these really
it's
specific...
It's more controlled.
It very much more controlled, which in some ways I suppose is good. But in the interviews, I feel like they can talk about something I wouldn't even have thought about, maybe, because it's quite specific
it's
to their micro community.
It's a constriction when you do that, because you try to keep things... the way you like, but it's a constriction.
Yeah, absolutely. And even on questionnaires where you get the kind of information you might get in interviews, you find that they've written maybe a sentence about something and you can't, or they've ticked something and it seems a little odd compared to the rest of your answers, and you can't ask.
Yeah.
Like that's one real benefit, I think, of being able to interview and be able to record and come back to it.
Then I find the corpus really amazing. You know, when you go to your data and you create a corpus, mm-hmm. it's amazing because different people can have a different... can find something different, the corpus.
Yeah, so can have different interpretations. Or can, absolutely.
Just had this experience this morning. There was one undergraduate student in the lab, mm-hmm. and we had a look at the transcript yesterday. I was helping her, and we couldn't find really what she was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But then she kept doing that in the afternoon. She came up this morning and said, "Oh, you know what? I found it's not something she was interested, but she found something." She said, "Look what the people do." And it's not very typical of Scottish. And I said, "Wow." I mean, I never had that. I knew that transcript, but never had a clue they were doing this kind of sounds. Mm. It's really interesting. So when you go back to your supervisor, you should mention this because it's a really good finding. Mm-hmm. You spot something really. So this is why I found corpora fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because it's like a tool that gives people, it's like an open book and people...
Oh, completely. And it's like so much research and so many... It's about what the researcher takes to it as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose we just can't forget that always comes into whatever research we do.
That was really nice.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Thank you.
And
so
also to compare these two kind of...
Yeah, because
recording.
We do very different kinds of... Or recordings for very different purposes, actually.
Yeah, because yours is more field, let's say.
Yeah, field work based.
Field recording. Mine is more lab based. Mm-hmm. So it's two different approaches. And
yeah, but obviously there are different factors relevant for different types of research. And that's maybe the most important thing to remember and take from
us. It's good to know different techniques we use, you know, more the lab, so to try to be very very quiet, you need to make sure all the equipment is fine, so mm-hmm. do a lot of checking before to avoid clippings or noise that you don't want in the recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you do something like a tomograph field, you don't really
in the field you try and do this to the largest extent possible, but quite often you always have to make compromises with these things because you're out in the field and you're doing this in people's homes and in people's places of work.
Then you don't really want people to feel too nervous, so...
Yeah, it's playing these factors off against each other and just trying to figure out what works. But I think once you've done one or two, you start to get a feel for what works. And but hopefully this discussion might have helped a couple of people to start off.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I find phonetics and also linguistics very fascinating. I'm just in love, and making recordings great, I think.
Definitely, and ethnographic fieldwork, sociolinguistics, onomastics for me, name study, which not so many people do.
It's great because you can always go back and listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's something that people get to do. So we're quite lucky, I think.
I think we definitely are. So if anyone's still listening, then good luck with your fieldwork. And I hope this has helped.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.